Unmeritam yena tasmai chi gurave namaha. So Prabhupada actually said that we can understand how to be swamis or renounced or devoted to Krishna by studying the lives of these six Goswamis of Vrindavan. And especially Prabhupada recommended that we study this particular poem by Srinivas Acharya, which is called the Shad Goswami Ashtaka. That means, Shad means like six Goswami Ashtaka. You know, the six prayers of the six Goswamis. And it describes their devotional service in great depth, that Nijahara Vihara, that they gave up sleep, they gave up eating, and Hey Radhe Rajadeva Kehe Nanda Shunokuta, they would actually run around Vrindavan in a mood of ecstasy and transcendental emotion. I was thinking about emotions the other day. Of course, there's the material emotion, which is, you know, the sick emotion, a mental disease, in the material world, which is actually based upon self-centeredness. Oh, nobody's known the trouble I've seen. Nobody knows the sorrow. And then there's the spiritual emotion. It's just your hankering, intense longing to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to help others go back to Godhead. I mean, it's all these intense, it's called lawyum. Lawyum means like greed in Sanskrit. So intense greed. And of course, Rupa Goswami describes that this lawyum, oops, it's that. Oh, he's all right. I guess he wants to stay there. This lawyum is the price for pure devotional service. You gotta be merciful. Oh, there he goes. Is it Brahma? Oh, he eats Tulsi? Anyway, maybe he gets rid of the bugs that hurt Tulsi, like the ladybugs. So, talking about the six Goswamis, but lawyum means intense hankering to just be with Krishna, serve Krishna, please Krishna, etc. So one has to develop that emotional sentiment. And when one develops that emotional sentiment, then other things like eating and sleeping and other bodily activities become insignificant because it's just, anyway, it's just so intense. So this is actually the goal of Krishna consciousness, to actually become intense emotionally. Rather than like a stone. And it's exactly the opposite of the goal of Buddhism, which is to become like a stone. Like a, you know, nothing. You are nothing. Okay, nothing. No emotions, no feelings, no nothing. So, of course, there's that typical joke, you know, what do you get a Buddhist for Christmas? You get him nothing. So Gopalbhatta Goswami displayed this mood of intense love for Krishna and also intense humility many times, which we'll talk about. So, all right. So, as far as the life of Gopalbhatta Goswami, he was the only Goswami of Vrindavan that came from outside of Bengal, in West Bengal. All the other Goswamis, and most of the primary followers of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came from Bengal. Even Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, which they were from Bengal. I mean, practically they all except for Gopalbhatta Goswami. Gopalbhatta Goswami came from South India, of course, mid-South, basically. Sri Rangam, you know, real South is Kanyakumari, but, you know, mid-South, we would say. And Sri Rangam is in the state of Tamil Nadu in India. And in the state of Tamil Nadu and also Andhra Pradesh, primarily the Vaishnavas are Sri Vaishnavas. Sri refers to Lakshmi. And of course, Vaishnava means he who worships or she who worships Vishnu. So This is called the Lakshmi Sampradaya. And that's Ramanujacharya's Sampradaya, the Sri Sampradaya. So they worship the Lord in a different mood than we worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They worship Lord Vishnu and Lakshmi. And we worship Krishna and Radha. So Krishna and Radha... So Krishna and Radha, Krishna and Radha are the same as Lakshmi and Narayan. However, the mood is quite different. The mood that Radharani and Krishna have is, Radharani is a left-handed gopi, and you have Lakshmi, of course, is not gopi, but she is like right-handed, very submissive. She always massages the feet of Lord Vishnu. She sits on the chest of Lord Vishnu. There's a mark of Lakshmi there. So she's very, very submissive, and she's scared. Like there's that story in the Chaitanya Mango, how Narada Muni, he wanted some Mahaprasadam, and Lakshmi said, I've been ordered not to give it to you. So with Radharani, Radharani may disobey Krishna's order sometimes and aggravate him, because that gives Krishna happiness. Whereas Lakshmi never dares to do that. It's just awe and reverent, and she has a very opulent situation. Of course, people in India generally, they like to worship Lakshmi. Just like you have this Diwali. And on Diwali, they don't want to spend any money. They become Jewish for the day. And because if you spend money on Diwali, then it's considered... the rest of the year, you're going to lose money. So that's the day that sannyasis definitely go, don't go visit anybody. You don't get any donations. So everyone worships Lakshmi for, opulence. There's even Lakshmi Puja and all these things that, people are very much into that in India. And you see, practically in everybody's altar, there's Lakshmi. They worship Lakshmi like that, for Lakshmi. And actually, it's not really for pure devotional service. They worship Lakshmi because they love her. They worship Lakshmi because they want something from her. So she's like their banker. Whereas our worship of Srimati Radharani is we are worshiping Srimati Radharani just to give us this bhakti shakti, so that we can please the Supreme Personality of God and have the internal mood of, causeless surrender to the Supreme Personality of God. So this is, it's a little bit different. Anyway, so Gopal Bhatta Goswami's father was Venkata Bhatta, and he had a nice uncle. His uncle was Prabhunanda Saraswati, and they were actually very great pure devotees. So what happened is, once upon a time, as all stories start, Lord Chaitanya was doing his tour of South India. And Lord Chaitanya stopped in many places on his tour to South India. And every one of those places, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur installed the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya. So when you go to South India, you actually see the lotus feet. And each of the places, Tirupati, going up to Tirumala, there's actually feet going up the hill. And Singhachalam, the same thing. Mangalgiri, the same thing. And of course also in Srirangam. But Srirangam is a very interesting place. It's situated on the Kaveri River, and it's like an island, they say, but it's actually like an isthmus. In other words, it's surrounded by water on three sides. And the temple is quite tall, very tall, and also the gopurams, the gateways when you go in. There's actually different gateways around the temple and all the four sides. And then there's different walls. There's seven walls surrounding the temple. Because in the first section around the temple, the Brahmanas, and there's the Kshatriyas, and the Vaishyas, and the Shudras. So everything is divided according to Varnashram caste. So Lord Chaitanya went there. And there's many stories about Lord Chaitanya's visit to Srirangam. And when he saw Lord Ranganath, he became very ecstatic. And it's very similar to the story of Lord Chaitanya going to the Puri temple. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya bringing him in. So at this particular point, Venkatabhata brought Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in. One thing is, Lord Chaitanya, while he was in South India, he was feeling so much separation from Lord Jagannath that he even carved his own deities of Lord Jagannath with his hand in Sriranga. And I have pictures of that. It's actually right across the street from the house of Venkatabhata. When I was there, I actually visited the house of Venkatabhata. The original house of Venkatabhata. And his descendants were living there. You know, one interesting story, and I've told the story, some of you haven't heard it before, but I went to some of his descendants, and they had just come back from Los Angeles. And I said, what were you doing in Los Angeles? And they said, we were visiting our disciples. And I said, who are your disciples? And they said, the Beach Boys. I don't know if any of you remember the Beach Boys. But, yeah, they were, anyway, a group. A musical group that chanted Hare Krishna. So, not really. So his descendants are still there. In other words, they're from a Brahminical family, they're generally considered Brahmins. You know, I'm not passing judgment, I'm sure they're great devotees of the Lord. So Lord Chaitanya stayed with Venkatabhata for 4 months. Now generally, when a sannyasi is traveling, he doesn't stay somewhere for 4 months. In fact, it's described that the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, they would stay practically under a different tree every night. Now why is that traveling like that? Because they say a rolling stone gathers no moss. In other words, if you stay in one place, after a while you start to decorate the place, and you need a nice couch, or what about the curtains? And I'm sure all of you experience that when you're staying in one place. You really gotta move. You know, even, you know, my house, I start moving the furniture around, think maybe I need a new bed. You know, one day I threw away my bed, because I need a new bed. So, the sannyasi's not supposed to think like that, so he just has to keep moving. In other words, you don't get attached to anyone because you don't know where you're waking up in a particular morning. But Lord Chaitanya stayed there for 4 months, because that was the injunction in those days, that a sannyasi couldn't travel during the Chaturmasya period. Chaturmasya means the 4 month period, which is generally the rainy season in India. And because a sannyasi couldn't travel during that period, he had to execute special austerities to remain detached from this world. That's why you have Chaturmasya. You know, people just don't understand that. They think Chaturmasya is just a ritual. But the ritual started for a specific purpose, to help a sannyasi remain detached. Because unless he controlled his tongue during that period of time, he would start to get attached, because they'd be feeding him, he'd be in someone's house, and they'd be feeding him, and maybe there'd be some nice young girl serving the prasadam, and then he'd be thinking, why did I take sannyasi? I could be here. Like this. So therefore, special austerities each month, giving up something, and really strictly the sannyasis wouldn't shave during those 4 months of the rainy season. And there's a reason for that. It wasn't copying the hippies. The reason for that was that it was very hot and muggy during the rainy season. As we know, when you go to India during the rainy season, not only is it around 45, 50 degrees sometimes, but it's raining and the humidity is like 99%. It's really bad. Yeah, 45 Celsius, and then as they say in India, nobody goes outside during the day except for mad dogs and Englishmen. You heard that saying before? That's a famous saying in India. Actually, that's from Rudyard Kipling. I don't know if any of you know who Rudyard Kipling is, but that's all right. So that's the special austerity. It really helps you be detached when you're sweating like a whatever, I won't mention. When you're sweating and it's so hot and you have a beard on, of course you ladies can't imagine that, but it's really intense. Even without a beard, it's intense outside. So it keeps you detached and you're eating very little. And you can't even eat a lot when it's that hot. You can eat some fruits, and then after that you look at some solid food and you go, yuck. Because it's so hot you can't sleep. Because it's so hot. And so it really helps you. So Lord Chaitanya displaying the pastimes of an ideal sannyasi stayed 4 months during the rainy season. And during those 4 months at the house of Venkatabhata, who is a follower of Shripad Ramanujacharya and engaged in worship of Lakshmi Narayan, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu developed a very friendly, even joking relationship. This is very nice, you know, that the Lord is actually a person. I mean, you never hear about that in other religions, how God develops a joking relationship with his devotee. I mean, Moses goes, sees the burning bush, and, you know, God kills a whole bunch of people being envious and angry, jealous, and stuff like that. But, you know, God, you know, just joking with someone back and forth. Mm-hmm. Have you ever read about that in the Christian literature? Or Allah comes and he plays a joke on Muhammad? I don't think so. So, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's God. Radha, Krishna, Nayanya, God in the mood of Radharani. So, what he did was he was very much joking with Venkatabhata and joking about Venkatabhata's worship of Lakshmi Narayan. So, you know, he said to Venkatabhata one day, and Venkatabhata's son, Gopalabhata, was listening to the whole thing. He was about 5 years old. Lord Chaitanya was very affectionate to Gopalabhata. Lord Chaitanya would hold Gopalabhata on his lap and play with him and everything like that. So it's very interesting. Lord Chaitanya actually was cultivating Gopalabhata so that later on Gopalabhata would become one of the most important leaders in Gaudiya Vaishnavism. So Lord Chaitanya said to Venkatabhata, he said, your Lakshmi is supposed to be so chaste. You know, you claim that she's a chaste lady, but look what she's doing. She's trying to associate with another man. She's trying to associate with Krishna. And she's performing austerities to associate with Krishna. You know, can you imagine, like, if someone was married and your wife is performing austerities to be with another man? You know, really intense, you know, austerities, like, I don't know what austerities ladies do. Like eating very little so they get very thin and things like that. So that would be the austerities nowadays that ladies would perform. But Lakshmi was, I mean, she's already most beautiful. So she was performing great austerities and chanting Krishna's names and wanting to become associate of Krishna in Vrindavan. And then Venkatabhata responded that she's not unchaste because Krishna and Narayan, they're actually the same. They're just different. Krishna is the pastime form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, okay, I accept that explanation. But tell me why, in spite of performing all those austerities, she can't enter into the Vrindavan pastimes. And Venkatabhata responded saying, this is too deep for me. I can't understand these things. And then Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained to him that the actual reason she couldn't enter into the Vrindavan pastimes is that she was attached to her opulence as Lakshmi. Not that she was attached to the jewelry and everything like that. That's really not the point. You know, people misunderstand that. That the lady wouldn't give up her jewelry to associate with Krishna. But she was attached to the mood of opulence. The mood of worshipping Krishna in a very opulent mood. Of course, as neophyte devotees, we are advised to worship Krishna in a very opulent mood. We don't worship the deities of Radha Golokananda in the Raghunuga mood. We worship them in the Vaikuntha mood. As Prabhupada said, we worship them as in the mood of Lakshmi Narayan. In the mood of Krishna and Vrindavan, then we'll be dressing the deities completely differently. And sometimes devotees and may get in that mood to a certain extent, just like when we used to dress the deities, we put bushes all over the altar and birds. And the pujaris got upset with us. So that's another story. But generally we should stick to this mood of Vaikuntha when worshiping the deities. That's why there's this big controversy going on right now, like, do you show Radharani's feet or not? Even on Radhastami, Prabhupada did give some instructions not to show Radharani's feet, And the only time he gave instructions to show Radharani's feet was with Radha Damodar, specific deities of the Lord. The Radha Damodar deities that are now in Devanagari. And so, but nowadays the devotees sometimes get into worshipping Radharani in a mood that's really not appropriate according to their platform in devotional service, like, and this Gopashtami, sometimes they dress Radharani as a coward girl, or a coward boy, sorry. And that's really not what Prabhupada wanted us to do. Prabhupada wanted us to remain in the awe and reverent mood, because basically we're still struggling with the six senses in the mind, the five senses in the mind. Manasashtani, Indriyani, Prakritishtani, Karshati. So therefore, we stick to the awe and reverent mood. And even if we're on a higher platform, we stick to the awe and reverent mood, because most of the devotees in the temple are not sufficiently advanced like that. So we have to be very, very careful. And Prabhupada was always very careful about this. He never, let's say, overtly displayed the intimate mood of worship of Radha and Krishna. I mean, sometimes it may come out inadvertently, but generally he was just very, very cautious, cautioning us. Okay. So, anyway, so Lakshmi was attached, getting to the point, Lakshmi was attached to the mood of awe and reverence, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was preaching to Venkatabhata, that, you know, Radharani and Krishna are the original forms of the Supreme Personality of God, and all the other Ete Chanksa Kalakshamsa. Krishna's too, Bhagavan Swayam. All the other manifestations of the Lord are expansions of Krishna in Vrindavan. All the other manifestations of Krishna's consort, such as Sita Devi or Lakshmi, are expansions of Srimati Radharani. So, and then Venkatabhata accepted that, and Prabhupada Saraswati, Gopalbhatta Goswami's uncle, also accepted that and became Gaudiya Vaishnavas at that time, which is really interesting. Of course, they didn't take reinitiation, which is also interesting, because you're not supposed to take reinitiation. They accepted Lord Chaitanya's the Shiksha as their Shiksha instruction, and Shiksha Guru. Alright, and so, this happened for 4 months, and then when it came time for Lord Chaitanya to leave, Gopalbhatta, this little boy, fainted. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to him, you have to stay here and serve your mother and father. Later on you will come to Vrindavan. So we see that when one had a mother and father that were pure devotees of the Supreme Personality of God, that the Lord instructed the devotees to stay with their mother and father, like this is Gopalbhatta Goswami, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami was instructed in the same way, but not Raghunath Das Goswami. Raghunath Das Goswami was basically instructed to get the heck out of there, because Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said his father and uncle were like worms in stool. It's interesting how Lord Chaitanya dealt with devotees' parents in different ways. You know, if the parents were great devotees, then stay with them and serve them. But if they were even devotees but interested, you know, worshiping Krishna for some material benefit, which is what, that's why Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used this expression, worms and stool. Because a worm and stool you pull out, you know, you give them some good instructions, like, anyway, you understand the metaphor. Then they just jump, the worm just jumps back in. Like here we are in Bhagavatam class, and I say, well, the purpose is to serve Krishna, not get into just trying to enjoy this body. The goal of life is not to fill your belly. You are the soul. And then someone says, very nice, Maharaj. And then after that, they do exactly the opposite of what I told them in class. So that's worm and stool. So we have to see whether we're worms and stool. Apply that to ourselves. I'm not talking about applying it to your parents. Apply it to yourself. You know, you're hearing something. Yeah, I believe in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, but, you know, you're only young once. Let me enjoy life, and when I get older, I'll take up Krishna consciousness fully. So, that's a worm in stool. You may be a young worm in stool, or an American worm in stool, but we may be worms. Anyway, so Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu considered the parents of Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who was Gopal Bhatta at that time, were pure devotees. So just stay with your parents and serve them, rather than just run away from home. So while he was staying with his parents, he became more educated, being instructed by his uncle, Prabhupada Saraswati, in Sanskrit and grammar, rhetoric, and all the scriptures, Vedanta Sutra and all the other scriptures. Then after some time, his parents were getting very sick, getting ready to pass away, and they instructed him, after we pass away, you must go to Vrindavan and take shelter at the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So then they passed away, and Gopal Bhatta went immediately to Vrindavan. And when he was in Vrindavan, the other Goswamis who were there too, like Rupa Goswami, sent some messages to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that Gopal Bhatta had arrived there. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so pleased to hear that, that he sent some of the vestiges, the dress of sannyas, to Gopal Bhatta Goswami. And that was the kopina and the outer garments of the Babaji order. It's interesting also that when people took sannyas in those days, they actually, it was the Babaji order. In other words, the dress was very short, like gamsha, with a little wrap on the top. And even they renounced their Brahmin threads. It's interesting. They didn't have any Brahmin threads at that time when they took the Babaji order, because it's considered they renounced social status. Because the Brahmin's thread actually represents social status. Like we're having this discussion now on the internet now about women gurus. They say, well, women can't become gurus because they don't have Brahmin threads. They can't give Gayatri mantra. And I said, well, what about Lord Chaitanya? He gave up his Brahmin thread when he took sannyas, and Goswamis gave up their Brahmin thread when they took sannyas, and they gave Gayatri mantra to people. Anyway, Hare Krishna. So it's different arguments that we hear. So anyway, so he received the, you know, loincloth and dress of a Babaji, and he was just very, very happy, associating very, very closely with Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. At one particular juncture, he decided to go to the Gandaki River to get some Shalagram Shilas for worship. So he went, because the Shalagram Shilas are generally worshipped in a mood of awe and reverence, the Vishnu expansions generally. So because of his background in Sri Vaishnava, the Sri Vaishnava philosophy and practices, he decided to worship Shalagram Shila. So he went to the Gandaki River, which is in Nepal nowadays, and he got 12 Shalagram Shilas. And then he came back to Vrindavan, but he was thinking, even though he was so qualified, he was thinking, I am completely unqualified to worship these Shalagram Shilas. So he said, I got to bring them back. So it's not that if you feel yourself unqualified that you just give them to someone else. Just like we see sometimes that some people get Shalagram Shilas and after a while they can't keep up with the worship, they're not really qualified to have them. And then you can go on eBay and find Shalagram Shilas now because people are selling so many of them. You just look it up on eBay. Shalagram Shilas for sale, you know, latest bid, you know, $50. If you accept the deity, you have to keep the deity, I was talking about Shilas, or bring the deity back to where the deity came from, as far as the Shilas are concerned. It's very important. When you're installing deities, you can't bring the deity back. Once you install the deity, that's it. That's why at ISKCON we have this deity worship ministry that can authorize temples to install deities. It's not that anybody can just install deities. They want to be part of ISKCON. They have to make sure they have so many pujaris, because we see here in ISKCON, we've been worshiping here in Nugaloka, we've been worshiping Radha Golokananda since 1985, and it's been a very regulated worship. There's never been a neglect of the deities. I mean, it's not that we're perfect, but at least it's gone on for that period of time. So it's Nitya Seva. It's considered continual, eternal Seva of the deities. So anyway, so he felt very humble, and he thought, I can't worship these deities, these Shilas, I have no qualification. So he went back to the Gandaki River, and he put them back in the river, which was the right procedure. And as he put them back in the river, they jumped out of the water. And they jumped into his hands. He said, what's happening here? you know, Sheila's no chump. It's not like Mexican jumping beans, you know. Especially they don't jump out of the water. So he thought, you know, is this a dream? And then he put him back in the water. And then, boop, they jumped back into his hand. He said, well, I guess I'm supposed to keep the Sheilas. So then he took the Sheilas back. And he used to keep them in the cloth bag around his neck. This is before he had the temple, the Radha Raman temple. So he would worship them, keeping them around his neck. And some of you see Vaishnavas to this day, sometimes they keep the little Sheilas around their necks. Just little Sheilas around their necks. And some people get really wild and they keep Jagannath deities hanging from their chest all day long. That's a little too much. You ever seen that? They walk around, you can see on the internet, you know, someone walks around like that. Western devotees, yeah. Not people from India. That's a little fanatic. So anyway, Sheilas people do that with. I mean, just like I have my Sheilas, I don't wear them around my neck. But I take them with me when we go out for dinner to the restaurant. I put them on. No, I don't go to restaurants. But we go to someone's house and put them on their altar, and then they offer the Sheilas. Said, you invite me, you got to take my friends with me. So he had these 12 Sheilas. He was worshiping them. And then he was thinking, seeing the other Goswamis of Vrindavan who had deities that they could dress every day. And he was thinking, boy, I'd really like to dress deities. And as he was thinking that, someone came and gave him a whole bunch of clothes. Here's some clothes for your deities. So that was like rubbing salt in the wound, so to speak. That he's thinking, oh my God, I have clothes for my deities, but where are my deities? So the next day, he woke up, and then he saw one of his Sheilas had been transformed into the deity of Krishna, Radha Raman. And in the back of this Radha Raman deity, very beautiful, beautiful deity, worship at the Radha Raman temple, of course, you can actually see the Sheila from which the deity came. You know, and this wonderful temple, they're very friendly to ISKCON devotees, and Prabhupada said that if you really want to see the highest standard of deity worship, you could visit this Radha Raman temple. They even let you take pictures of the deity. They're a very wonderful temple. One of my favorite temples there in Vrindavan. So anyway, then he began to worship Radha Raman, arranged for the construction of the Radha Raman temple. So about 10 years after this, this is in 1599 of the Christian era, Radha Raman appeared. This is actually the place at the temple, the Radha Raman temple, where the Prakastali, you know, where Radha Raman actually appeared. You can see the appearance place of Radha Raman, which is outside the temple room. So, ten years later, because Gopal Bhatta Goswami was wondering who's going to take over the worship of the deities when I pass away. So Krishna made arrangements for that. And so 10 years later, Gopal Bhatta Goswami was bathing in the Jamuna, and he went back to his kutir to perform his bhajan, and from his distance, he could see a young boy sitting at the door of his hut. And he was wondering, who is this young boy? This young boy was the son of a Brahmin. Gopal Bhatta Goswami was visiting a Brahmin, and the Brahmin was praying for his son, and Gopal Bhatta Goswami blessed him, may you have a son who is a great devotee of Lord Vishnu. It's interesting. And then the Brahmin said, if this son comes, then I will send him to you. Then he made this promise. So the person who showed up, the little boy who showed up at Gopal Bhatta Goswami's hut, was this son of the Brahmin. So Gopal Bhatta Goswami saw him, and he said, you know, who are you? And the boy said, you know, I am from Deva Vandyagram, which is where Gopal Bhatta Goswami met that Brahmin. And I've come from there. And then the boy explained, my name is Gopinath, and I've come to serve you. My father said I should serve you with my life and soul. Of course, in those days, people were obedient to their parents, too. Like my father said, I should go into business, but I didn't listen to him. So Gopal Bhatta Goswami remembered his previous conversation with the father, and then he accepted him, and Gopabhatta Goswami initiated him as Gopinath Acharya. And he became the next person to worship Radha Raman. And then Gopinath Acharya's brother after that became the next Pujari after that. That's very, very nice. So Gopabhatta Goswami published some books, particularly he was actually the first one who worked on the Shatshandarbha of Chila, before Jiva Goswami actually compiled them in a more systematic fashion. And Jiva Goswami gives Gopabhatta Goswami credit for that. He says, a devotee from South India was born of a Brahmin family, very intimate friend of Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, has written a book that he has not compiled systematically. Therefore, I, a tiny living entity called Jiva, am trying to sort the events of this book systematically, consulting great personalities like Madhvacharya, Sridharaswami, and Ramanujacharya. And Gopabhatta Goswami wrote a foreword on that book. And he also wrote other books like the Shatkriya Saradipika, a guide on Vaishnava Samskaras, specifically dealing with Brahminical rituals. And many of those particular injunctions are not applicable in the Western world because his book was written to sort of like integrate the Brahminical people into Krishna consciousness. It was part of it was a preaching strategy. And the Gaura Ganadish Dipika, Kavi Karnapur describes that Gopabhatta Goswami was a Nanga Manjari. And also, he's described by some authorities as Guna Manjari. He was born in 1503, and he left this world in 1578 on the sixth day of the dark moon, and that's today. So, I guess that's all we have time for today. Of course, Ramchandra Kaviraj, whose disappearance day it is today, was a great associate of Narottama Das Thakur, and initiated by Srinivas Acharya. He met his guru on the day of his wedding. He was coming back from his wedding with his wife, and he was sort of taken away from his wife. No, actually, he always remained married. He didn't take sannyas. He was diverted from his honeymoon by his guru, Srinivas Acharya, and then he remained with his guru, took instruction from his guru, and became a great preacher of Krishna consciousness, specifically remaining most of the time with Narottama Das Thakur. And when he left this world, Narottama Das Thakur was so dismayed that he wrote this prayer to the departed Vaishnavas that we're going to sing after greeting the deities. Okay. So that's Ramchandra Kaviraj. Jai, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.